for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. We have been bringing you information about all things natural for many, many years. Our original radio show called Natural Alternatives began to air on 90.1 FM, which is out of Stony Brook, New York, way back in the early 1980s and still is on today every Friday at 6:30 p.m. And, of course, also we have a show called Herbal Yours, which is out of Garden City, New York on 90.3 FM, and that's on every Wednesday at 12 noon. And then our show, The Natural Nurse, with Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network, every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. This show is really special because it's part of the Progressive Radio Network, which has a focus on everything you need to know, especially if you like natural living and have a progressive viewpoint on life. And this station is run by Gary Null. It's the Gary Null Network, Progressive Radio Network. One of the really excellent things about all of our shows here, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and all the other wonderful shows on this station, is the fact that they are archived at a really great archive. You can come to prn.fm anytime, day or night. If you hear something on today's show or any other The Natural Nurse show or any other show here on PRN, you can come and visit the archives. I find the easiest way is to go on prn.fm. On the top, go to shows, and then it opens up to all the different shows. And as you click on each show, you will be immediately brought to the archives of many of the shows that are available. And I'm so happy that we have over 140,000 downloads of our show. It seems to be growing every single day. And we have over 200 shows just on the shows that we did here on PRN. So we are really happy to have that content available for you, your loved ones, and your friends and family. So again, thank you so much. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And today we have a very special guest, Dr. Lori Nadel. And Dr. Nadel specializes in helping people who are struggling with fears that prevent them from moving forward in their life. Her practice is focused on providing support, insight, and effective interventions that give people strategies and tools to overcome fears relatively quickly so that they can be replaced by calm, confidence, and a sense of well-being. Her mission is to offer short-term, goal-oriented, patient-focused therapy with personal attention and quality care. For those who have already tried traditional psychotherapy, Dr. Nadel offers a new caring approach to resolve internal conflicts and issues that have not responded well to previous therapies. She is a specialist in the physiology of nonverbal communication and knows how to sit with a patient's unconscious or subconscious mind in reassuring way to create a profound rapport that facilitates the unburdening process. Dr. Nadel has been in private practice since 1991 and works collaboratively with psychiatrists, medical doctors, and psychologists to create a supportive team for each individual. Dr. Nadel has also been an expert witness in PTSD cases in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. On today's show, we'll talk about a lot of interesting concepts with Dr. Lori, and including a wonderful book that she wrote, which is called Sixth Sense, as well as her involvement in a project called MindBodyNetwork.com, a web address you will want to have in your favorites for information, books, courses, and updates on holistic wellness. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lori.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So I'd like to go back in time because you are not a newcomer to the field of holistic therapies. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what made you have an interest in this aspect of healing?
Well, actually, I started in the news business. I started as a journalist in the late 1960s, and I was a reporter in Chile during the state of siege after President Allende was overthrown. And because of the fact that we were living in a military dictatorship, finding actual facts was difficult, and to make a complicated story short, one of my sources informed on me to the junta, the military junta that was ruling the country at the time. And I was living with a family of political prisoner, and they had to send me into hiding until I could get out of the country. And when I came back, I found that I had kind of a classic case of post-traumatic stress disorder. And every time like a truck would go over a manhole cover, I would like jump under the bed. And it was, it resolved, I mean, eventually. I did get some help for it, but when I was changing careers about, almost 20 years later, and I started to study psychology seriously after writing, my book Sixth Sense, which is about the intuitive function, which is a natural mental ability that we have, I thought it would be very important to learn about and help other people who had post-traumatic stress disorder because I had experienced it myself.
And you've had a lot of exotic experiences in your life. I will share with our listeners that I know you personally, not only as someone I found online to interview on the radio show. And you really have an extensive and interesting background. I know that you've traveled with various shamanic groups as well, investigating how they interact with nature and what their concepts of healing are about.
That's right. I spent part of every year for a decade traveling with and meeting with and studying with indigenous healers and shamans in different parts of South America. And I have been fascinated by the ways in which they draw upon the kind of deeper intuitive wisdom that we consider to be kind of exotic, I guess, or unusual, and they consider it's just a natural mental ability, which was kind of the thesis of my book, Sixth Sense, which is that our sixth sense is a natural ability that everybody has, and we can all cultivate it like playing the piano. And just like playing the piano, we can, almost all of us, learn how to play chopsticks. And if we want to play Mozart, we have to practice. And if we have a great deal of talent, we might be able to play Mozart at Carnegie Hall, but there's only one Mozart. And similarly, you know, there are people who are intuitive geniuses in all different fields of endeavor. I mean, starting to be recognized as probably the main element in a visionary CEO, somebody who starts a new company, for example, and drives it to success. It usually starts with some kind of an intuitive flash or an intuitive knowing about where and how the product or service will be needed. Certainly is an important component of art. Medical diagnosis comes in very, very prominently in doctors who are able to solve cases that other doctors are unable to solve. And it needs to be an important part of our education, because there are many children who are naturally intuitive, and they get penalized for it because the core curriculum approach doesn't value children who learn differently or think differently. But it is an ability that everybody has that we can all cultivate, and the indigenous people, especially the shamans and healers, are naturally gifted in it, and they have a completely different focus and format and technology, if you will, for accessing the intuitive part of the mind.
Well, that was a beautiful wrap-up. So the thing about you that I really love so much, one of the many things that I love about you, is that while you have an intellectual grasp and ability to explain these things in Western terms, you actually have, like we just shared, immersed yourself in experiential knowledge. Like, you're not just reading about shamanic healers in the jungle. You are there. You're not just thinking about, let's say, terrorist activities and how that affects people and creates PTSD and other psychological issues. You've experienced them yourself. So you're really one of those hands-on people. And although we don't have it written down here, there's another book that you wrote, which I thought was excellent. And it's really also about taking yourself to the edge experientially. And that was about surfing, really.
Yeah, windsurfing. Yes, that was my spiritual memoir. It's called Dancing with the Wind. It's a true story of Zen and the art of windsurfing. And it's about the kind of the 20 years or so that my life kind of shifted out of journalism and into the mind-body exploration arena, and windsurfing was a very big part of that, because I took it up as a kind of meditation, if you will, or an activity to counterbalance the craziness of working in a newsroom. And it, you know, it is about the art of balancing on water, which is, technically it's impossible to stand on water because it's always moving. And I am naturally klutzy. So I took up something that was naturally basically impossible for somebody like me to do, because, you know, I have trouble, like, walking into a room without knocking something over. So it was a huge, learning for me on many, many levels, and it actually took me into the practice of Zen for many years, and studying with Peter Matheson and sitting every day and working with a group of Zen students and finding different ways of balancing the inner world and the outer world, which is becoming so much more important now. There was just a 30-day mindfulness summit online, and every day there would be another leader in the area of mindfulness talking about what it meant to him or to her. And I think that it's becoming more, and it's almost like a revolution in how we take care of ourselves. And for somebody like yourself who's been meditating, you know, for so many years, or somebody like myself who has been engaged in kind of mind-body exploration for a very long time, it may seem like it's long overdue. But we live in such turbulent times that the only way to really get through it or to cope without, you know, kind of losing our grip, so to speak, is to discover ways of going within and connecting with a source of stillness that can help us stay balanced no matter what the ground zero is in our lives.
Wow, so well put. Yeah, I've been very interested in the movement that you discussed in terms of mindfulness, because where there's so many different prayer elements and meditation techniques, all of them, very often when others are looking at them, they feel that it has a religious connotation that they may not want to jump into. I know personally, right, I have had patients, and if I bring up the word meditation, that turns them off, because they, right, a born-again Christian, or they're a devout Catholic, or they're a devout Jewish person, and they feel that that's in the realm of Buddhism, whether or not it's true. But mindfulness really has been something that's been able to be accepted, even though it's the same basic stilling of the mind technique, really wonderfully on a more mainstream level. So I really think that's become a powerful movement.
Oh, it's huge right now, and it's taught in the workplace, it's taught in businesses. There are new companies that start up that have meditation rooms or quiet rooms for people. As a result of writing Sixth Sense, I was kind of contacted by the American Management Association, and I developed a series of seminars in critical thinking, using intuition and the whole brain as kind of a framework, as you can think critically in each of these four kind of brain systems or functions that Carl Jung identified, which are intuition, logic, feeling, or what we call emotional intelligence, and sensing, which is being structured and detail-oriented and organized. And as I would go around the country and teaching problem-solving and thinking and critical thinking, I would always ask these classes of managers and executives, you know, how many of you have complex problems that you have to solve during the day? And everybody would raise their hands. And I would say, and how many of you have thinking time built into your day? And I have to say that over a three-year period, I taught several thousand people over a three-year period, only three or four raised their hands. And I would ask them, well, how do you make complicated decisions if you don't have time to think? And that's kind of the dilemma, I think, of how our society is conditioned to, quote-unquote, just do it. Like we're primarily extroverted sensing, which means that we want action and we want decisions and we want solutions before we've taken the time to think. And people don't know how to think. People don't know that they have an inner world. People can't describe what their internal processes are. And so this whole revolution, whether you call it mindfulness or whether it's, you know, teaching people how to sit quietly and just become aware that the mind is an inner environment, or it's an inner landscape, and you can learn what happens inside that inner landscape, and you can change the processes by which you navigate through that inner landscape. That's kind of revolutionary, and it's very new for our action-oriented workplace and society in general. How are we going to solve the problems that face us if we don't know how to think?
Very good question. And I would say one of the things you've done to move forward and give society some of this information so we can learn more about our inner mind and our mind-body connection is the project you are involved in right now, I guess forefront, although all your other things continue, is mindbodynetwork.com.
Yes. Right.
So let's talk a little, because anybody can actually go on there already,
right.
mindbodynetwork.com, and we will be linking to that also, you know, in the show, because we'll be talking about it. Very easy to find, mindbodynetwork.com. What is this new project about?
Mindbodynetwork.com is very exciting. It's the first global online community of both integrative and holistic practitioners. That means MDs, nurse practitioners, people like yourself, doctors of osteopathic medicine, and others who practice traditional medicine or allopathic medicine combined with complementary and alternative modalities. And also holistic practitioners, which include, Reiki healers, for example, anybody involved in alternative therapies, neuro-linguistic programming, which I've been using in my practice now for over 25 years, master practitioner of NLP, hypnotherapy or hypnosis, past life regression therapists, any kind of spiritual or pastoral counseling, any kind of shamanic counseling, anything that is holistic in scope. Any people who have products, services, or books that address any of these modalities can become a member of the community at no charge by going to mindbodynetwork.com and putting up your, you can sign up, you can put up a profile, you can post your blogs, you can post links to your books, products, and services. And we are also going to be offering online kind of mini courses, kind of like TED Talks, in a variety of subjects, which we have conducted a nationwide Google survey, and we've identified that the key subjects that the majority of people are interested in are fitness, nutrition, and of course they're very closely aligned, relationships, spirituality, stress management, and yoga.
I want to backtrack a little bit there, Dr.
Yeah.
Lori.
Yeah.
So you're involved in starting this mind-body network.
Right.
How? What are you talking about in terms of a nationwide Google survey? What does that mean?
Well, that means that if anybody actually can go to Google, and I think you do the search bar consumer survey, and you can commission Google to conduct a nationwide survey for you. You have to pay for it, and which they will send out, you know, a random sampling of 3,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 or how many people you want, and you can ask a question such as, you know, which of the following topics are of the most interest to you? And then the Google Analytics will compile all the statistics based on the total, demographics, men, women, age groups, and you can see how these subjects rank in importance by demographic, by gender, by geographical area, if that's what you want. And so in doing it this way, we are trying to really meet the growing need for information about anything to do with mind-body modalities. So in stress management, for example, one of the hottest fields in stress management is work-life balance. And there certainly has been stress management, of course, is a huge field that does encompass mindfulness and meditation, and for many people, yoga, and to a certain degree, nutrition, as we've talked about. But stress management is also the science and art of finding, according to the research at Harvard, 20 minutes a day when you hit the pause button and you kind of give your conscious mind or your rational mind a break and you focus in on what it looks like and sounds like and feels like to be effortlessly and completely and organically relaxed. And that apparently is one of the hottest fields of interest in the country at large. And so we are putting together very dynamic, as I said, they're like TED Talks. There'll be 15 to 20-minute kind of mini-lectures or workshops on these subjects, which are of the greatest interest to people around the country. And we're working on putting some of those together right now. Now, the first one that should be going up on the site today or tomorrow is an interview that I was privileged to do with newsman Dan Rather. And, of course, I've known Dan for many years. I worked at CBS News and was a founder of the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is a human rights organization for journalists, which Dan is a member of. And when I approached Dan about Mind Body Network, he thought it was a nice idea, but certainly not something that he really connected with. And then I talked to him about the surveys that had been done and pointed out that work-life balance was really one of the hottest fields in stress management. And who better to talk about work-life balance than somebody who has been leading an incredible career for, you know, over 50 years, who has been shot at in the corporate suite, who has survived and gone on to bring us frontline coverage of the major news stories of the past 50 years, and has managed to, who has a beautiful marriage that has lasted 60 years in a family and grandchildren in an industry that
talking
takes
about
marriages
a representative balanced life
right.
High-end professional.
Exactly. A high-end profession, high visibility, you know, a lot of pressure, you know, deadline demands, incredible stamina, a lot of traveling, corporate politics up the wazoo. And what has he learned from life? What has he learned from reporting about life? And that the subject of the interview, which is actually an ebook that we will be offering in the next day, which is a companion to this half-hour program. The program is called Dan Rather, Courage Under Fire, and it's a half-hour show, an interview show, kind of a profile of Rather and what's important to him. But the ebook is called Lessons from the Field, Everything I Learned About Life I've Learned from Reporting. And it is really about finding balance in the storm, so to speak. It's about how to balance the demands of work and life, how to find gratitude and humility and courage in the midst of a lot of pressure, and even when the entire kind of focus of the spotlight, public attention, is focused on many areas of your life, how to deal with loss and betrayal in a public way. He's really been very generous in speaking very openly about these life lessons. And,
well, we look forward to seeing that interview, Dr. Lori Nadel, on someplace anyone can reach it, mindbodynetwork.com. And we are going to take a little break right here. We're going to listen to a natural medicine chest. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Lori Nadel. And you can find her at laurienadel.com. That's L-A-U-R-I-E-N-A-D-E-L, laurienadel.com. Thank you for that fascinating discussion, and I really look forward to listening to the interview with Dan Rather. And we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and then we'll be right back with more.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Okay, and thank you so much once again for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. And we teach classes and see patients every day. Dr. Zamperone has an office in Connecticut. I have an office in Oyster Bay, New York, and also Deerfield Beach, Florida, where people come in personally. But more and more people are interacting with us virtually, and that means either online or on the phone. And we do teach classes both on ground and on the phone, which you can take and get credits for, both college credits and professional CE credits. We are currently certified through the Florida School of Holistic Living for nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, psychotherapy, and massage therapists, and nutritionists, all of whom can get CE credits by taking our classes. And if you are not one of those people who have a professional degree but just want to learn, we also have a certification for you. And we have certificates through Natural Alternatives, Health Education, and Multimedia Services, as well as from the Florida School of Holistic Living. And this means when you complete a particular course of study, you do get a beautiful certificate that you can place on your wall, and you can use it towards accumulating a higher end degree, such as being part of the American Herbalist Guild, which grants an AHG, or if you're a nurse working on your holistic nursing certification, these classes can be used towards that. So we're very, very excited to be able to offer that to basically anyone 24/7. You just need to get in touch, and we set this up individually or for a group that you may have. So you can visit naturalnurse.com under education to find out more. Today we have as our guest Dr. Lori Nadel at LoriNadel.com, and she has been offering so much information about the many phases of life that she has gone through, as well as her professional relationships with CBS News anchor Dan Rather, as well as the books that she has written, such as The Sixth Sense and other books as well, and her new project, which you can put into your search engine and have as a favorite on your web list, which is mindbodynetwork.com. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Lori.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, we've gone through so many conversations, but I would like to move into your expertise in terms of your private practice in psychotherapy, what you're doing with that. Because, you know, your real PTSD professional, and we've had so many unfortunate incidences that really lead right into that. And I know you specialize in people who were involved in the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center, and then again Hurricane Sandy, which you were personally impacted by, as well as, of course, we have all kinds of events going on in the world today that are going to flood your offices with people that are having problems with, you know, immigrants coming in. All kinds of war events around the world. We had one recently in France, but someone might listen to this show a year from now. These things seem to be ongoing.
Unfortunately, we are living in troubling times, and the incidence and the projection for increases in natural and what we call intentional disasters. And intentional disasters are disasters that are created by one human being against another, or one group of human beings against another. So we are looking at, you know, sudden violent changes in climate, in the environment, and Bloomberg News last year done a study in which they said that this year, in 2015, more Americans would be killed by gun violence than in traffic accidents. I'm going to say that again. This year, and if you listen to the news carefully, it does sound and seem and appear that we have a much higher incidence of gun violence incidents being reported in the mainstream media, and I haven't actually tabulated it. I think it would be a bit grim for an individual to have to do that. But the projection was, as of late 2013, that when that report came out, that by 2015, more Americans would be killed by gun violence than in traffic accidents. And that's pretty staggering. And we can talk about the causes, and certainly there are many people that are looking at the politics and the science of climate change and the need for gun control or weapons control, and all of those things are not my focus personally, because my work is helping people to, I don't want to say the word cope, helping people who are struggling to make sense of life after their normal lives have been devastated or shattered by a sudden and violent event, whether it's environmental, like an oil spill, whether it's a natural catastrophe like Hurricane Sandy, in which I lost my home of 18 years. I had 4.5 feet of water, and because of the storm surge, the sewer pump in our town broke, and so when the tide receded, everybody's home was covered in contaminated sludge and raw sewage. So it was an environmental disaster as well as a natural disaster. And then I also work with people who have been survived shooting incidents, school shootings, car accidents. It kind of sounds like doom and gloom, but it's a reality of life that when your life has been impacted by a shattering event, your old ideas of normal are kind of blown away. And I hate the term the new normal, because I think, in a kind of more generic sense, you come to realize that there really is no normal, and that sudden and violent and unexpected events can happen to anyone at any time. And so you kind of need to kind of shift your, in addition to processing the loss and the shock and the horror and the process of rebuilding your life or building a new life in many cases, there's also a wound to the psyche, which has to do with the expectation that, or the belief or the delusion, if you will, that life can be safe and manageable and predictable. And I really think that's kind of a cultural delusion that we have. It's like a shared delusion. Oh, if we just visualize and if we, put everything on a spreadsheet and we plan and we organize, then we'll have exactly the life that, that we want and we desire, and we'll be happy. And if you speak to people, and the reason I spent so much time, every year I would spend time in an environment where people didn't have indoor plumbing. And I would come back, and every time I turned on the faucet and clean water came out, I was like in this state of ecstasy. And people would say, "Where have you been? It's like you crawled out from under a rock. You go on a date in Manhattan in the Upper East Side and come back, from the restroom and start raving about how the plumbing works." And you're not going on another date with that guy, that's for sure. But I used to spend time because it would give me an appreciation of what it's like to live without these things that we take for granted. And one of the things that people do not take for granted in shamanic cultures or indigenous cultures is the concept that we are in control of everything in our lives, that we don't have to live in harmony with forces that are greater than we are, whether they're forces of nature, which of course we have, our relationship with nature is completely out of balance. And our relationship with human nature is out of balance, because now we have this incredible increase in the epidemic of violence. And so these systemic problems, which are far greater than I can comprehend or contend with in terms of coming up with solutions, cause so much deep hurt and damage in people's hearts and minds, that my job is is to really work with people and to help them to heal. And what happens after a catastrophe, and I know I apologize for going on a little bit long, but it's a very important point, is that after a tragedy or catastrophe, whether it's, you know, personal, like a car accident, or something greater like a terrorist attack in Paris, people tend to be very supportive for 2 months, 3 months. And then they tell you you should be over it because they're over it. Because
yeah,
it hasn't
that's
affected
a very
them
good
directly.
Point. Like, is there, you know, there's a wonderful essay that that is just popping into my mind that I read the other day, which Steve Jobs wrote. And that was an interesting situation, of course, because unfortunately he passed away from cancer, and he did try a lot of natural remedies at first and positive thinking and all that. But when he got to the point where, you know, it was pretty imminent that the end was near, he wrote some very profound things that really reflected a lot about what you just said, Dr. Laurie. I'm wondering if there's a way to actually post that discussion. There probably is, because it's just open to the public at, you know, if you ever wanted to, at Mind Body Network, because it was really talking about what you just discussed, where he thought he could, you know, analyze, regulate, and move the situation out of his life, which eventually he could not.
Right. And when you speak to people from other parts of the world, and certainly people our age who were raised right after World War II, people in third world countries, you know, their parents and the culture in general gives them values that allow them to not take it personally, that in any given lifetime there are going to be cycles of prosperity and cycles of hardship, and there are going to be good harvests, and there are going to be cycles of famine, and there's going to be illnesses and death, and there's going to be health. And that's just the way life is. Life goes in cycles, and it's not personal, and it's not because you did something wrong. And I think that part of the healing process is really about discovering, you know, the silver lining or the blessing or the teaching in any misfortune or hardship. And that's not an easy thing to do, because you can't trivialize the losses and the disturbances and the harshness of the aftermath and the very long cycle of healing that it takes to recover after a catastrophic event. It takes, I think, the current thinking among disaster mental health experts and relief experts, 3 to 5 years to process a catastrophe. And in the case of something like September 11th, that's a very, very deep wound, and a lot of people really prefer not to think about it. And, well, it only happened once, and it's never going to happen again. But, in fact, it's a wound to our collective psyche, because we were living under the delusion that we were invulnerable and that, you know, things that happened in other countries would never happen to us. And unfortunately, we've kind of shifted back into that position. You know, oh, it's happening in Europe. It's happening in Iraq. You know, it's happening in Afghanistan.
You know what? That's really interesting, because when I was watching the coverage, and, of course, this particular show we're doing right after the event in France, although if you're listening at another time, it's still valid because we're talking about it in general in terms of dealing with these kinds of issues. A news reporter actually was on, it was a young woman, and I thought that was a very ignorant statement of hers, going, oh, well, you know, in Europe these things go on. We're so lucky here in the U.S. I said, how old is she? Did she live through 9/11? I guess not.
Right. She may have been 10 years old, you know, during 9/11. And if she grew up, I know I had the opportunity to travel to the West Coast a few months after 9/11, and it was as if it didn't happen. I mean, people were not reeling from it the way we were reeling from it in New York for a couple of years after the event.
Still are, with people passing away. Now, we do need to take one more break here, Dr. Laurie, for station identification. That's where our Progressive Radio listeners right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z get to hear about other fantastic shows. And remember, there's so many. Just go to prn.fm and look at the shows. And we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we will have more with our discussion with Dr. Laurie Nadel. You can find her at laurienadel.com, and also look at mindbodynetwork.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, is all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sleva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.FM. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we love to hear from you. We love that you are listening to us live. I get so many comments on Facebook and directly by email, people contacting us through naturalnurse.com. And when we check our ticker on the archive download, it's going up daily, headed towards 150,000 downloads. So very, very wonderful to have your participation. We love bringing you this information. And a new place for you to visit is mindbodynetwork.com. And our guest today, Dr. Laurie Nadel, author, therapist, and involved in so many aspects of natural and holistic wellness, is our guest for today and is one of the, would you call yourself an originator of Mind Body Network? How are you involved with
I'm a founder of Mind Body Network. I'm actually technically vice president of Mind Body Network. It is the vision of Tori Kasihi, who has really had this phenomenal vision of providing an online place or community, building a community where, as I said, both integrative practitioners who are traditional MDs who have expanded into other modalities and holistic practitioners who are not necessarily part of the official medical community, but who do all kinds of healing for the mind and the body and the spirit, to be able to have a networking site that is more than a directory. It's a marketplace. It's an opportunity to share ideas, to post your blogs, to post your books, your e-books, any kind of digital information that you want to share. And for us to be able to actually support each other in our work as we grow.
So when you say digital information, is that just like embedding a YouTube, or can the site actually hold little videos?
Yes, I believe that the site will be offering videos actually for online kind of e-learning opportunities at the beginning, in the form of, say, for example, the half-hour show that we are launching, I believe, today or tomorrow, Dan Rather, Courage Under Fire, and the companion e-book, which is Lessons from the Field, Everything You Learned About Life I Learned from Reporting, which is Dan Rather's insights into how to keep your life balanced under tremendous stress and pressure, and who better to share what he's learned with us over the years. Now, it's interesting. Lessons from the Field is based on a book that I had the pleasure of interviewing the author of, a book called Lessons from San Quentin, Everything I Learned About Life I Learned in Prison. And this is the true story by Bill Dallas, who was a mortgage broker in the 1990s and kind of got caught in the dot-com boom and was arrested and sentenced for some financial wheeling and dealing. And to make an example of him, the judge sentenced him to 4 years in San Quentin. And he writes about how he thought that he was about to be killed or raped on his first day in the yard, but he was surrounded by a group of men who said, "We were just like you on our first day, and we thought we were going to be killed or worse, but we're going to mentor you, and we're going to teach you how to survive." And so this incredible book, Lessons from San Quentin, has really inspired me tremendously, and it was the model for Dan Rather's e-book, which is called Lessons from the Field, Everything I Learned About Life I Learned from Reporting. It's available on mindbodynetwork.com, and all the proceeds from Lessons from the Field are being donated to the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is a worldwide organization which I was privileged to help to found back in 1980, and it provides support and information and help, including legal help, for journalists around the world who are detained, imprisoned, arrested, and wounded in their line of work.
So that's wonderful. People can watch the Dan Rather
video
and download
and
the e-book.
In fact, if you go to mindbodynetwork.com and you click on Dan Rather, there's a little description of what the video is and a place where you can sign up and register. And as soon as we have the show, Courage Under Fire, up on mindbodynetwork.com, it will be sent directly to your email inbox. So you
can
register
now. Oh, that makes it easy. So people get a little heads up once the technical prowess advances to it actually being available, which is soon. It's imminent. And
yes,
do remember that people listen
to
our show here, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, all the time. We have our little download counter showing that people download the show. So, of course, if you're listening live today, that's what we're talking about. That will happen in the imminent future. But if you listen at any other time, it's there now. So you can just go to mindbodynetwork.com to find this video and lots of other information. I notice when I'm perusing the site, and I am on the site, I published an article on the site, and you have many practitioners there which have e-books that are available now as well.
Right. We are offering almost like a digital library of e-books for people, which we have up on the homepage, and also if you are a practitioner and you would like to offer your ebook, I mean, you can put it up on your profile page or put up a link to it if it's available on Amazon. So we are looking forward to, you know, kind of being a marketplace, not just for sharing ideas, but for actual work that people are producing.
Well, that's, you know, an excellent resource, and bringing it all together in one area. And then the talks will be similar to TED Talks, as you said, which will be informational. And, you know, from deep thinkers and people who have been putting time, like you have, all these many years into trying to represent a balanced life in an unbalanced, really worldly situation.
Yeah, that's very well put. I mean, the shamans used to say to me that, you know, we in the North, because I spent a lot of time in South America, the people of the North, the industrialized world, your relationship with nature is out of balance. And because all of nature speaks and we have forgotten how to listen to nature, eventually, you know, nature's going to start screaming. And nature's going to, you know, kind of demand our attention because we haven't been listening when she's been speaking, she's been warning us in more subtle ways. And as we continue to ignore her, the voice of nature has been getting louder so that now, you know, we have wildfires all year round. There's no longer a wildfire season. We have these bizarre storm patterns, whether they're blizzards that collide, you know, creating superstorms, or storm fronts like Hurricane Sandy, where a couple of storm fronts collided in an unfortunate pattern right over 1,000 miles of coastline. And I think what people don't realize is that although it didn't do the kind of, it's not the same kind of damage that was done during Hurricane Katrina. However, it affected over 1 million people who live between Cape May, New Jersey, and New Haven, Connecticut. So because this is a very thickly settled coast and the population area is very dense, FEMA has said that they expect to have a presence in the Northeast Corridor here for at least a decade. And
well,
some of the insurance people have said that, too. And there are many people I can share with you who are still homeless. There are many people who never received the payments that they needed from their insurance company or from government funds that were allocated for Sandy relief and who remain homeless.
Well, you know what, Dr. Lori, we're going to have to end there because, believe it or not, we have gone through many wonderful topics. And just tell our listeners the best way to get in touch with you.
Best way to get in touch with me is through my website, which is laurienadel.com. You can email me or you can call my office at 212-560-2333. That's 212-560-2333 or laurienadel.com. Sorry,
thank you, and that will
be
on our archive so people can just click right through to it. So thank you so much, listeners, for joining us for today's fascinating show with Dr. Lori Nadel about mindbodynetwork.com, PTSD, and the many other interesting topics she brought to us, also the author of Sixth Sense. So thank you so much, and listeners, thank you for joining us once again, and Dr. Zamperone and myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse at naturalnurse.com, hope you stay healthy.